If you go back just 5 or 10 years in the history of technical analysis, it was a much different environment. You didn't have the mass participation that you have in the year 2001 or the year 2000. The general public didn't understand exactly what technical analysis was about. There were still some of the great books out there, John Murphy's books, and a number of books in the futures markets. But generally, it was a fairly esoteric practice that fairly few market participants used in making their buying and selling decisions. One of the good points of that kind of environment is that technical analysis tended to work and was more dependable than it is in the current day. Technical analysis has come to the masses. Over the past few years, the internet, more than anything else, has opened up price charts to the general investor and the general trader, the retail trader. Many sites have sprung up that now give you not only delay charts, they give you real-time charts, daily charts, and intraday charts, along with explanations on how to read them, along with pictures of pretty price patterns on how to trade them, along with a lot of technical indicators and how to compose them, and how to go ahead and make buying and selling decisions based on oscillators, based on divergence, based on convergence, based really on all the things that that you see on a Q chart site, all the things that you see on a TA site. Unfortunately, once the masses find anything in the markets, the system inefficiency that allows profit from it starts to close up. Common knowledge closes down the ability to earn easy money in the market. When technical analysis was just understood by a fairly small group of participants, it was the price patterns worked in a more dependable manner. Now that everybody knows what a triangle looks like, and everybody knows what a head and shoulders pattern looks like, and everybody knows what a double top looks like and a double bottom looks like, you have to be a lot more counterintuitive in order to make money in the markets. This brings up the concept of pattern failure. You know, rather than abandon the common patterns that have been around for just dozens and dozens of years in the markets because they don't dependably produce the moves that they did in the past, we need to start to consider planning trade strategies that enter trades in the opposite direction from the natural bias of that particular pattern. A classic example is an ascending triangle. And we've used this example at times in the past. An ascending triangle has a horizontal top, a flat top, and a slowly rising series of higher lows along its bottom until the rising bottom and the top meet each other in the place, and price typically should explode upward in a fairly vertical move. Well, ascending triangles have become part of the common knowledge over the past 5 to 10 years. Now many ascending triangles don't break out to the upside. So when we see an ascending triangle start to form, rather than get caught into the massed consciousness of, oh, here's an ascending triangle, I need to plan a long trade, we need to start to look at, okay, what signals will be generated, what signals can be generated where I can sell this ascending triangle short. And the great thing about pattern failure, when a price pattern does exactly the opposite of what it's supposed to, is that it tends to, number one, produce a more dependable trade because you're working against the masses. For example, when you're selling a pattern failure, you're selling short into all those folks that bought that pattern and are suddenly realizing that pattern's starting to break down and they need to get out in a hurry. So these pattern failures tend to produce less whipsaws. They tend to produce more dependable price movement over a fairly longer number of bars. And for this reason, they have a very high reward to risk ratio. Now, finding the right place in order to trade a pattern failure is really, really the challenge. Fortunately, the way patterns are built, they tend to have breaking points in both directions. You take a descending triangle. Now, a descending triangle has a series of lower highs and a horizontal floor. And as the lower highs start to drop down, it starts to meet this horizontal floor. And at some point, price is supposed to break the horizontal floor and fall into a sell-off. We just mentioned that that patterns tend to have breaking points in both directions. You know, you can look at this horizontal floor in a descending triangle and say, yeah, when it breaks that point, that's a good short sale. Or you can look at the series of lower highs and draw a trend line across those lower highs. Now, pattern failure will take place when price holds that horizontal floor and then breaks through that set of lower highs. That's a pattern failure taking place. Now, unfortunately, or fortunately, markets tend to be a little bit more perverse than just give us gifts with opposite outcomes. For example, going back to that descending triangle, what will very often take place is that the descending triangle will indeed go and break down for a few ticks or even a few points. It'll go and take in all those people who want to sell short, who see a breakdown of that descending triangle, and as it breaks down, they sell short into the market, and then suddenly the market pops right back above that horizontal line, takes out all those people who had sold short. It ignites a short squeeze, which then pushes price up into that set of lower highs, builds congestion right along that point, and then breaks out in the opposite direction. Now, it almost seems inevitable these days that price patterns will go ahead and try to take out one side of the market before they go and move in the other to the other side of the market. Now, this is as opposed to a price pattern or, say, a descending triangle just moving down to that horizontal low but never breaking it and then turning out to be a pattern failure and turning into a rally. It almost seems like the market insiders, the market professionals, really want to have it both ways. They want to take out the short sale volume, and then they want to go in the direction that they wanted to go in the first place. Now, the good part of this is a little rule I use in my head that seems to be a fairly dependable rule, and that is really simply stated that they can only mess with your mind in one direction at a time. If you have a major whipsaw in one direction, chances are that the market wants to move in the opposite direction in these pattern failure events. Now, a classic example of this is a 2B reversal. A 2B reversal, simply stated, is when for a top is when a market makes a high, pulls back, and then rallies back up to that that former high point. Now, it rallies up to that high point, and it keeps on going for a little while. It takes out that former high for a few ticks, and then reverses violently back down below the breakout point. The example on the screen with Oracle has some elements of a 2B reversal on it. You know, it's really the example that we presented is really a cup and handle failure, but it's also a 2B failure as well. If you go back to the around December 12th, you'll see that the market made a high right around 32. Then the market pulls back, it rallies back up toward that former high, forms a little ascending triangle between the 15th and the 19th of December, and goes and breaks out for about looks like for about 2 hours. And then reverses violently. Now, this is considered to be a 2B reversal, and the 2B name comes from Vic Sperandeo and his book, Methods of a Wall Street Master, where he talks about this type of failure trade. And it is indeed a failure trade. And the flip side of this is a 2B reversal bottom, where the market seems to fail a double low. It makes a low, comes back, takes out the former low for a couple ticks, and then pops back above the former low. And very typically in our modern market environment, you never get simple bottoms or simple tops anymore. They're always accompanied by these 2B reversal tops and these 2B reversal bottoms. It's sort of part of that internal selfish motion within the markets, perhaps driven by the futures, where we just can't stand to make a bottom or a top unless we violate that bottom or the top, at least for a little time. Now, when I'm planning pattern failure trades, there's one thing to keep in mind. Every trade must stand on itself. You want to plan trades in both directions when you see a pattern, but you're going to have separate entry signals and exit signals for each one. Just because a pattern fails in one direction doesn't automatically yield a pattern failure entry signal in the opposite direction. The breakout point and the breakdown point for a specific pattern are going to be located in two different places. So when a stock, say, breaks out and fails in one direction, you don't automatically enter in the other direction. You wait until price pulls back to the potential breakdown point in that opposite direction, and then you use your set of criteria saying, okay, I'm going to enter a narrow congestion right near this breakout point, or I'm going to let this breakout point break down, and then I'm going to look for a pullback to get into that market, or I'm going to use a disciplined momentum strategy where I'm going to follow that original breakdown point, and I'm going to get in there, but I'm going to put a tight stop behind it so I don't get caught in a whipsaw that pulls me back above that breakdown point. Now, pattern failures in very many senses will be the up-and-coming trades for the 21st century. Very, very, very much part of the futures market, and they're very, very much part becoming part of the equity markets these days.